Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During this edition of the show, we give you access to local physicians and public health experts with information on COVID-19 and recommendations related to it. If you have a question for our guests, please email it to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181.
Good morning. It is another Wednesday, another Doc of the Rock today with Drs. Jones, Mortensen, and Theobald. Let's get an update on what's been happening locally over the course of the last weeks. Talk a little bit about rising cases in Anchorage and other parts of the state. Surges in the lower 48 and giant fourth waves sweeping across the world. We've been at this for a year now, dealing with new issues and new questions virtually every week. We have some new things to talk about today, but it'd be lovely if we can get some audience participation. We do have one question lined up for the panel here already. The good doctors are here to answer your questions. If you have one, you can call 486-3181. Or shoot an email to lowdown@kmxt.org, and we'll try and get your question answered before the end of the show. So today, again, Dr. Shanna Theobald from the Kodiak Ambulatory Care Clinic, Dr. Curtis Mortensen from the Kodiak Community Health Center, and Dr. Evan Jones from CANA. Morning, all. Happy Wednesday on a fine almost April Wednesday.
Good morning.
Yeah. It's a beautiful day, a little bit cold, but a nice Wednesday. Well, spring break's over. Cases are slowly ticking up throughout the state. We're getting warnings still from the state. Alaska reported 649 infections, but no new related deaths between Saturday and yesterday, according to the DHSS. Slight increases in average daily case counts in recent weeks. Many regions of the state are still at the highest alert category based on current per capita rate of infection, but we still have one of the lowest death rates per capita in the country, and we're doing exceptionally well in terms of people getting vaccinated. Over 40% of Alaskans have now gotten a shot. And in Kodiak, we're doing way better than that. We've had pop-up clinics. We've had people flying out to distant areas to vaccinate segments of the population. It seems like we're doing pretty well. But are we kidding ourselves, or are we in the middle of what seems to be happening in the lower 48? There always seems to be like a 3 to 4 week delay between what happens down south and what happens up here. So those warnings from Anchorage sort of give me pause to consider that we're not out of this yet. People seem to think we're out of it, but it doesn't appear that we are.
I mean, I think it shouldn't come as a surprise that we're going to see a little bit of a rise in cases after spring break and all the travel that happened at that time. I think that really want to encourage people that did travel during spring break to heed the advice of the statewide recommendations for quarantining and testing, because that will hopefully help prevent community spread of disease. I think Alaska is ahead in the way of the vaccine, which should be protective for us. But again, the thing that's kind of sticking out there is how do these variants affect the vaccine efficacy? And so I think that that's the thing we still don't fully know yet.
We're definitely going to get an uptick, I would imagine, after spring break, a little bit of a lag before we realize it. But I think Alaska is in a far better place than the lower 48, even though we tend to lag behind the lower 48 with disease kind of things happening up here a couple weeks after it happens down there. We are far more vaccinated than the lower 48, nowhere near herd immunity. But here in Kodiak, we're running about 50% vaccination, getting close to 50% vaccination. And so is that herd immunity? No, nope. But is it going to cut down on the amount of transmission? Absolutely. And that was the, it's one of these things that the more people we get vaccinated, the less the impact of somebody coming into town who's sick will have. And so we continue to encourage people, as you're eligible now, to start making appointments to get this. And there's more and more availability now, so you should be able to get vaccinated.
I think too, just looking at the numbers, for the state, we're up to 25 per 100,000, which is in the kind of higher risk number category. And Kodiak, we're up to 5 per 100,000 this last week. They look at it from, I think, Monday to Sunday, or maybe it was Saturday to Saturday, but basically looking at over a week, we were at 4 the week before, and we were down to kind of our lowest point since that last surge of 2 per 100,000. So just to kind of put the numbers in perspective, we are heading to, you know, above 5 over 100,000 is when we, I think, is when we go into the yellow risk zone. So just so people know, yes, we're very close. We've got an excellent vaccine. We're really getting the vaccine out in Alaska, which is wonderful. It's kind of miraculous. But also with a little kind of word of caution, I think, too, in these next couple of months, we need to see how things play out and remain cautious until we know we're kind of really getting through this without putting our community at risk.
Well, doesn't these new super variant super spreaders that are more deadly, don't they cause you concern that if that gets into the population in Alaska, that those numbers can exponentially rise pretty quickly?
I think that's the big wild card here, you know, is just, you know, I think there's a lot of these variants we don't even know, right? Because we're not even, like, I think we haven't done historically a great job of tracking them in our country. But the more people that get infected, the more opportunities there are for variants to come into place that may be potentially more infectious, that may be potentially more deadly. And so I think that all the more reason to get people vaccinated. I think, you know, all the more reason to continue taking some of these mitigation efforts seriously, especially when we know that there's times when we're most vulnerable to these surges, and it's when there's lots of travel or lots of get-togethers, right? So holidays, spring break, these things are, they have the tendency to cause like these large increases in cases because more people are mixing. And so I think that anyways, the getting back to the variants, that's the wild card in the room. We just don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
It does appear, though, that from all of the results of the testing that's going on so far, that the vaccines that we're using now are pretty effective at keeping us from dying and from transmitting the disease to somebody else. But there still is this possibility, right, that even if you're vaccinated, you can transmit it to somebody, and you can actually still contract COVID and still have a bad result.
So that was the big concern that came out when these vaccines first were released, is it hadn't been really studied. Are people silently carrying this disease? Does this vaccine just keep you from having symptoms? And we didn't know. They weren't studying for that. They were studying for symptomatic people. And so they weren't testing everybody. They were just testing people who developed symptoms. Did this person get COVID? Extremely effective with that. Well, now we're starting to get early studies in from England showing that not only is it effective in preventing symptoms, it is effective in preventing spread of the disease also. We look at about a 94% efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine in preventing symptomatic COVID, because that's what we originally studied for. A study that has not been published yet, but they kind of had an early sneak peek at it, shows that it's about 89% effective in preventing spread of the disease. And so do we know that maybe people have very low levels of virus, but not enough to spread it? And so they do kind of carry the virus. We don't know for certain, but as we study these vaccines and how they work in the world more and more, We're going to continue to glean more information. But right now, all the news about the vaccine has been pretty good, showing that not only are they effective at preventing symptomatic disease, cutting down on hospitalizations, but now we're finding they're effective at preventing spread of the disease. And they're pretty effective against most of these variants also.
And there is good news on the part of the vaccination program as it's the trials for vaccines for children, too. So it looks like instead of thinking we weren't going to get vaccines for children for another year, there's some talk now about maybe having them ready for the fall semester of school.
Yeah, exactly. I think Moderna and Pfizer hope to have it approved by late summer, maybe July, maybe as early as July. That date's still tentative, and then have them ready for kids by the fall, which would be excellent.
Right.
Kind of going back to what Dr. Jones was speaking of, which is, the vaccine is very effective, but I know that there's been, and maybe Dr. Jones can talk more about the study out of Washington. I haven't heard about that one in particular, but we know that this vaccine is very, very effective at preventing disease, specifically severe disease, but that doesn't mean it's 100% effective. And so we had a few patients this week, even at our clinic, that had been traveling, came back, and had been vaccinated previously, and then did get COVID-19. And so just so people are aware, I think it is important for them to know that even if you've been vaccinated, it's not the get out of jail free card. I think that there is still the possibility to contract the virus. In general, people that do contract the virus tend to get less sick, but again, it's not 100%. There are people, and I'll let Dr. Jones take this because he kind of was talking about a study earlier, but they're definitely, it's not 100%. And I think it's important for people to realize that it's very good, but it's not 100% because I think that the misinformation can get out pretty quickly when there's bad outcomes in people that have been vaccinated.
Yeah, down in Washington State, it's a place where they have well over 1 million people vaccinated. They have found that over 100 of those people have had both vaccinations have contracted coronavirus, and one of them did die. And so they say that 1.2 million people were vaccinated, but 102 people of that 1.2 million did contract coronavirus. And those percentages may sound bad, but it's a pretty small percentage. It represents, 0.01%. And the reality is we're not being as careful now as we were 6 or 8 months ago. And because of that, because we're kind of tired of quarantining and wearing masks all the time, the possibility of getting infected is going up. But at the same time, this vaccine is very effective. It's just that we are leaving around 6% of people who have been vaccinated still didn't get a proper immune response and don't have immunity to coronavirus. And so out of that 1.2 million people, we would expect that over 60,000 of the people are not immunized against coronavirus.
That's effective and just as importantly, safe.
Nice. We have sound effects.
I think the other thing is if you do have the vaccine and you still get COVID-19, the rules still apply. You still need to isolate and you still need to do these things. That was one piece of education that we were providing this week for this individual. And it's kind of it's a bummer. It's frustrating because they're, here you are, you're getting the vaccine, you're trying to do the right thing. And then you end up getting COVID-19 despite it. And then you have to do the isolation and all that stuff. But just so that you're aware, if you do, even if you had the vaccine, if you're having symptoms that are suspicious for COVID, you should get tested and you should still follow those guidelines for right now.
Well, how do you tell if you have a good immune response once you get the vaccine? There's no way to test whether or not it worked on you, right? Unless you get exposed.
There's really not a great way to test it. Even if we tested for antibodies. We don't know what thresholds are at this that confer immunity at this point. I would just encourage people. I just got back from traveling a week ago Monday. I've been tested 3 times since then just to make sure that I'm not carrying it, but continue to be cautious when you come back. I don't know that we have a great answer at this point whether you're immune or not. Even if we checked antibodies, we don't exactly know. Are the T cells enough, or do you need antibodies to confer immunity? We don't completely know the answers to these questions. So even if we tested, we don't know what the answer means.
Well, it's interesting. Do you think that people that are at higher risk need to still be even more cautious even after they've gotten vaccinated twice? You know, if people are in high risk categories and they were prioritized to get a vaccination now, and if you can still contract the disease, the line is, of course, that because you've been vaccinated, even if you get exposed, you're not going to die. You're going to have lesser symptoms than you would before. But wouldn't that impact somebody who's at higher risk in the first place, to maybe their symptoms or their end result would be worse? You know what I mean? So it kind of goes back to my question a couple of weeks ago about whether or not it'd be effective to have a super booster, you know, where there'd be to ensure yourself that you're going to get a positive response from a vaccine, you know, take 2 different kinds, you know, get a booster as soon as it's available.
It is true that the elderly are have a more blunted immune response to most vaccines, and including, I think it looks like from what we're seeing so far, the COVID vaccines as well. But the CDC recommendation now is, you know, fully vaccinated people can get together with fully vaccinated people. I would still caution, especially that higher risk age group, to, you know, follow the CDC recommendations as far as still wear a mask when you're out in the public. Don't mingle with a lot of, you know, bigger crowds, especially with unvaccinated people, because there still is that risk. And hopefully, you know, the more people get vaccinated, the more everyone can really get together again is the ultimate goal. But in the meantime, until we're at that point, I would, you know, give that word of caution.
Well, that gets us into the big question, this listener question, which is, what are the dangers of not achieving herd immunity? You know, it sounds to me like that's something that's way off into the distance. And if you're saying somewhere farther down the road is the time where we can all return to not wearing masks and not social distancing, that doesn't seem like it's happening very quickly. You know, we tend to think we're doing great here in Kodiak, but we're nowhere near the numbers we need even locally for herd immunity. What happens if we don't reach it?
Well, I mean, I don't think that we're, you know, light years away from it. You know, we're sitting above 50% of eligible people being vaccinated. That, of course, doesn't include, you know, under 16 years old. But, you know, I think that guessing at herd immunity is a little bit of even amongst experts, I feel like there's variations in what that percentage actually is. And it really depends on a lot of things. It depends on how efficacious the vaccine is, how contagious the virus is. And there's nuanced things that are way beyond what I know that go into that. But, I don't think we are like light years away from being at herd immunity locally. I think nationwide, we're probably a lot further away, which does have a direct impact on us because I'm going to steal what Shanna said earlier. One of the impacts of not getting to herd immunity is it gives more opportunity for the virus to mutate. And so we're going to see more variants. The longer we stay away from herd immunity, we're going to see more and more variants. But the other, like, kind of the bottom line of not getting to herd immunity is, in the short term, you know, we probably won't see people opening up things, you know, like I said, you know, things that we all want to do, not wear masks and get together for big gatherings, those type of things. We probably will not have as much of that going on until we get there. The other thing is just like to be kind of blunt, more people are going to get sick and more people are going to die the longer it takes to get there. And if we'd never get there, then that's really going to be the case. It's just going to be, there's going to be more death and suffering. So.
But herd immunity to me implies global herd immunity in a way. I mean, we like to think of ourselves as being an island in the middle of the North Pacific in our own little bubble. And that means if you want to rely on not coming into contact with something, you have to stay in this little bubble. But other people don't. So it's going to, people can continue to come in. I mean, I look at this AstraZeneca not being going into Canada now. The huge surges that are rolling across Europe right now, the situation in Brazil is sort of out of control. I mean, herd immunity to me kind of goes back to smallpox days where, you know, we've eradicated the flu pandemic in 1918. You know, unless the world gets this under control, seems like we're always going to be impacted by it.
And we've talked about this before, that it is very important for the wealthy countries to help out the poorer countries, because what happens in Cambodia does affect what happens in Kodiak. And so the more places that are unvaccinated and it spreads through, the more chances of these variants that eventually become possibly resistant to the vaccines that are out there. And so I think it's important that we think of this as a international, we're now in a world where the whole world affects each other at a time. With the Spanish flu epidemic, it took a long time for it to go around the world. It took years for it to kind of go through the world. It was around the world in months, and found in very different countries in a matter of months from it being first discovered. So now that we're living in an international world, we have to think about what's happening in other places, and we have to help in places where they can't help themselves. And we keep looking at medications. There was actually an article out talking about the failed treatments for this, like ivermectin and ones that I find interesting, but they haven't borne out. Well, we have an answer to this disease, and we need to use it, and we need to give it to as many people as we possibly can, because it's going to stop the spread of the disease. If you don't like the idea of an mRNA vaccine, well, now we have different types of vaccines that don't have that. So there's lots of choices now, and they're all pretty effective. But not only does Kodiak need to get it, the whole world needs to get it. Otherwise, it's gonna, the variants are going to be visiting Kodiak. I would suspect that most of the variants around the world are in Alaska right now, because we're a highly transient society here in Alaska. We travel all over the place. And I would suspect that these variants are in Alaska already. We know some of them are, but I wouldn't be surprised. And like Curtis was saying earlier, there's probably variants in Alaska we don't even know about, that we don't know the nuances of them. Some of them may not make much difference, but others may get discovered in a month when we see there's some differences. And so the more people we get vaccinated, I know a listener was frustrated with the idea that we're going to get back to normal. That's never going to happen. You know what? The Spanish flu happened in 1918, and it took a while to get back to normal, but I do believe we're going to get back to normal. I believe the fear is going to subside as the disease subsides. The one thing that I worry about is we've become such a divisive, suspicious society that we don't trust our government anymore. We don't trust the healthcare community. That change could make it very difficult for us to get past this disease, that we're suspicious of everyone's motives. And because of that, I think it's going to be make it a little harder to get back to normal because the distrust in society now.
But in certain parts of the United States, isn't that sort of driving the spike? Because we've got Dr. Fauci talking about, you know, what are the reasons why we're seeing spikes throughout the United States now? Their response is because we're opening things up too fast and because there's this vaccine hesitancy and a lot of people don't want to do it. People want to go back to being normal without taking precautions. And we want to jump the gun. We want to get back to normal as soon as we can.
Yeah, Dr. Osterholm calls it the new normal, and I think it is going to be a different normal for a while, but closer to where we get to hang out. You know, we get to gather together. We get to, you know, have more of our normal activities. But you're right. That's driving the spikes, and then the B.1.1.7 is driving the spikes. So in Europe now, the B.1.1.7 has become the dominant strain by 70 to 80, 90%, depending on which country you're looking at. And in the U.S., we're getting up to 30% in some states. Once it becomes 50% of the dominant strain, that's when you kind of really see that, like, skyrocketing curve. So, there are a lot of factors, but again, we can't say it enough. Getting the vaccine, it's highly effective. All the long, you know, the data we have so far, long-term data from this, but also from the prior cancer mRNA vaccines, shows that there's not long-term problems from this type of vaccine. In fact, it's much less than, you know, getting the virus itself. The virus is injecting you with its RNA and tons of other proteins that it makes your body transcribe. This is a very simple kind of part of that virus that's not alive. And so it is much better for your system to kind of learn and recognize it and not get that coronavirus in your system in the future. Anyway, that's really going to be the more people we can get vaccinated around the U.S. and the world. The U.S. is the government is trying to move a lot of vaccines into some of these underdeveloped countries too, especially, yeah, Brazil, India. I mean, those countries are suffering hugely right now from coronavirus, and it is really important for us to kind of know that we're part of this global community, and what happens, like what Dr. Jones said, you know, around the world affects us. But I hope we just keep moving quickly. I think that's the biggest thing. We have had 128 million people vaccinated since I think Biden's goal was 100 million in his first 100 days of the presidency, and that's been exceeded. So there are really good kind of numbers, but we're not there yet. I think the next couple of months is going to be really critical to determine how well we do to get through this surge.
Go ahead.
Just commenting a little bit on, like, kind of the next few months. Like, I mean, I think that there is, like, this, and we all feel it, right? We all want to. I think that the listener feels it, but I think medical providers feel this too. Like, we all want things to get back to where they were as well. And I think that our government officials are under a lot of pressure to open things up. And I get it. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that want to get things back to normal. I think there is a risk. You know, we are opening up very, very fast, like very rapidly, like our state, but also, like, you know, other states in the country. And I think that there's going to be a natural spike after this. And again, the question is how bad is it going to be? And the ways that we can make it be not as bad would be to continue mitigation efforts and get as many people vaccinated as possible. Those are really the two things that you can do. And I think that, as we've said on the show many times, I think Alaska is in a very good spot to, both because of our vaccination rates and potentially because of our natural distancing that happens in Alaska. There's just not a huge amount of huge population centers. Those things are going to be protective for us. You know, again, coming back to, if you're getting back from out of state travel, then make sure you're doing the appropriate quarantining and these types of things. These are all things that will help prevent us from getting a bad spike.
But just on a qualifying that, the CDC recommendations, as I recall, were if you were fully vaccinated and you went off and traveled, there was no need for you to quarantine anymore. I mean, I know locally there's some internal policies that say, if, as long as you've been fully vaccinated, you don't have to quarantine. Am I correct that there, you're sort of implying that there is a quarantine requirement?
Well, I think the state of Alaska has gone away from a requirement to an advisory.
Right.
And I think some of this is common sense. Like, right, you know, you don't want to bring back, if you travel out of state, then you're at higher risk to contract the virus. And so trying to really minimize your social contact during that time when you first get back is really wise, and to monitor your symptoms closely. And if you develop symptoms, then you should definitely test. And some people are choosing to test anyways. And I think that that's not a bad idea. Like if you tested 5 days after you get back from travel. I think that, yeah, these have become not mandates though. Like you said, they've become more of an advisement by the state of Alaska.
Yeah. That makes it confusing for some people, though. I'll tell you that, you know, without having the government actually say, you should probably do this, or you definitely need to do this, it gives people free rein to think, I'm cool. I've been vaccinated. I don't need to do that because I'm not gonna spread it to anybody else. So
CDC, just to clarify, the CDC hasn't changed their recommendations for travel. In fact, they still don't recommend travel yet. But then if you do travel, they do say to, you know, get tested before you travel, 1 to 3 days before you travel, get tested 3 to 5 days after your trip, stay home and self-quarantine for a full 7 days after travel, even if your test is negative. So they still are recommending that quarantine period from travel. Exactly, it's true. The state of Alaska does not have that requirement, but Dr. Anzinc has also highly recommended that people continue to take that upon themselves.
Great. One follow-up question from another listener about herd immunity that he wants to know what percentage, I think you kind of touched on this, Curtis, a little bit, but what percentage is really necessary for herd immunity?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like 60 to 80% is kind of like a general, like, you know, range. And that's a big range, you know, that's 20%, which is a fair amount of the population. But I think to be clear, it's of the whole population, not just the eligible population. So like a lot of the figures we see coming out saying we're 50% of the population vaccinated, it's actually 50% of our eligible population. So, and right now vaccine eligible population is 16 and older. So I think that the 60 to 80% is kind of what I hear. I'm not sure if you guys have any other more updated data, Shanna or Evan.
Yeah, I think that's still kind of the guideline.
Okay, I have another listener comment. The Daily Paper often shows people without masks on in the community. What role does the media have in encouraging mask wearing? And should we be as comfortable with that? Not sure what kind of question that would be for you folks.
I know the media in general can have a big role. In the 1918-1919 flu, part of the problem was that the government, we were in a war, and the government didn't want to kind of cause, you know, our morale to go even lower. So the media didn't talk about the flu at all. But it was really interesting in the Great Influenza book, they talked about the places where the media was really, you know, kind of speaking out about the flu and saying what we needed to do, that we need to wear a mask. Those communities had a lower rate of transmission and infection than communities that didn't. So I think in general, the media can definitely play a role in, you know, keeping it on people's radars to continue wearing masks. As far as the specifics or, like, you know, images that are in the paper, I don't know the answer to that particular question, but.
Well, you can get people in a, you know, in a maskless situation, or just somebody might want to take their mask off when they're getting their picture taken for the paper. I don't necessarily know. I don't want to point fingers at anybody of how you do it there, but we don't seem to have. I've heard from a lot of people that went off and they did the spring break travel and said they went to play communities where they would go into a grocery store and there'd be nobody in the store with a mask on, or they'd be going to a mall and people were acting like normal. our community still seems to be pretty cautious. I mean, I go into our grocery store, and it's very rare when you see somebody without a mask on. And some of the other places as well. I mean, I'm not sure if life has returned and maskless in the restaurant environment, in the bar environment, but I'm not sure we can do anything more than what we're doing on this program and on the national programs that we air with, which is you folks who are experts telling people in the community what they need to do to keep us safe.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think there's a lack of information about this anymore. I don't think it's like, oh man, if they only knew. I think it's a choice at this point that people are going to choose to get vaccinated or not get vaccinated. I think education is good because I have talked to a lot of people about vaccinations. And once I go through in a non-judgmental way and not say you're really stupid for not getting vaccinated and just explain it to them, let them know that this is, we've discussed it on the show many times. This is not a brand new technology. It's been around since 1989, just the first application. And frankly, we do have more traditional vaccines available now. Once I explained the vaccines to them, I have had people go from saying, I'm not going to get this vaccination, to getting it that week. And that's been encouraging to me. We, as medical providers, I think the biggest thing is we've got to cut condemnation out of our, because if you condemn people for not doing it, it immediately puts them on the defensive and they can't hear anything else you say. I think we as medical providers need to get off our high horse about having this amazing knowledge that needs to be passed down to people. And we need to help people understand what this is all about and spend some time with them. And it takes time and it's a little bit frustrating at times when there is a doctor in Texas who's an MD and he's spreading misinformation about the vaccines and stuff, and his videos get tens of thousands of views, and it's hard to combat what comes down to absolute lies that he's taken up a political game with people's lives. And it is a political game what he's doing. If you really look at all his writings, it's a political game that he's doing. And the tough part is that if you say, hey, you know, Facebook and other things, don't run these, don't let him run it on their platform, then it really seems like a conspiracy of the government against the people. But I'll tell you, we got to get to the point where we can trust one another again, and really say, this is a person I know and trust. And so that's been my goal, is talking to the people I know about these things and helping them kind of persuade them along in hopefully the right direction.
Are you saying that tens and thousands of people don't listen to the Lowdown even? Is that what you're saying?
I'm pretty sure that it stretches well beyond that. Well, I know right now that my mother listens to this and she's not in Kodiak. So, it goes well beyond Kodiak. The ways to Florida.
We'll do a shout out to your mom.
My mom's birthday was yesterday, so I'll give her a shout out. Happy birthday, Mom. Thanks for listening to me.
I think we should sing to her. What do you think? Happy birthday.
That might be more deadly than the disease we're talking about.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Can I add something to that, though? Like, I think that I've had very similar experiences. In fact, I feel like every day I'm in clinic, I have at least a few patients that are high risk or haven't gotten the vaccine, that after a conversation and me earnestly telling them about the evidence that's for it, and also addressing their fears of it, and also expressing how much I care about them. You know, I think that with those conversations, many, many people will decide to get the vaccine because most people want to do what's right. And it's just a matter of hearing the information from somebody they trust and someone that they feel like cares about them. And I think that going back to what you were saying about our community being perhaps more cautious, one thing that I've always loved about Kodiak is that it's a community in the truest sense of the word. We're here together, right? We're stuck on an island together. And I think that there is something to be said for that creating, like, I care about you. We have to care for each other. And I think that one of the ways that's very clear that we can care for each other during this time is to, you know, wear masks, do some of these mitigation efforts, and right now get the vaccine. And I think that that speaks highly, I think, of our community, is that people are willing to do that. By and large, people are willing to do it. There's always going to be people that are going to be boisterously in the other camp. But I think by and large, people are doing what they should be doing. And I think that speaks well of our community.
I completely agree. I'm really proud to live in this community. And I think a lot of the stores have kind of kept their store mandate in place, which I think is just wonderful. And it is going to keep our community safe. We are doing really well because the community is kind of in this together. And yeah, hopefully it's just a couple more months before we're on the truly downside of the pandemic, and or the backside of the pandemic. And I think, you know, Dr. Osterholm said after this next surge, he's pretty certain that this will be kind of the end of the pandemic, which, or not the end, it might become endemic, but as far as, you know, having to kind of lock down and go through these big surges, that should be it. So we are almost through it. Hang in there, and we can get through it.
I guess my question is, how do we know that that's where it's going, though? Because with all those the lockdowns that occurred in Europe, you know, they did a really great job of knocking their numbers down really low throughout the whole continent. And then the British variant got out, and now they're really kind of in a bad place. And if we're a month or 2 months behind what's happening there, and we have all these warnings coming out throughout the U.S. that they're seeing their numbers go up already. There's another wave coming through. How do we know? Is it just because we're going to vaccinate people more? I mean, if we're vaccinating, but people are relaxing what they're doing, is there a fifth wave? You know, is there a mutation that's resistant to a vaccine that's out there somewhere?
I think,
go ahead.
Sorry. The answer, you're right. The reason why we think we're different now, or we're going to be different, is because of the vaccine rates. I mean, that's really the thing that's changed. And as we talked about earlier, the wild card, the thing with the variants is the big wild card in that. But in general, the vaccine is very effective. If we get enough people vaccinated, we shouldn't have another significant wave.
And to follow up on what you said, Dr. Jones, I mean, there's just been a proliferation of these anti-vaccine stories that have hit social media in the last couple of weeks. It seems like you can't hardly go to social media these days without seeing one of those Texas doctor things or somebody pointing out that one person who had got a shot died, or, you know, the person got two shots and they contracted the disease and died. But the math speaks more in the favor of get the vaccine because the numbers are so low that it's worth the risk, you know.
Unfortunately, there's millions of doctors in the United States. The unfortunate part is they're just like everyone else. Some of them will do anything for fame. Some will do anything for attention. Some will get taken in and truly believe false information and really believe this is the truth. So there's a combination of people with bad motives. And I think I've seen some of those when I really look at what they say in different places. They're saying anything to curry political favor. But there are some who I think genuinely believe what they're seeing, but they may not have the complete picture. And at times, I'm sure I've been in that group at various points in my medical career, with COVID or other things. I, you know, on this very show, I said, I'm interested in hydroxychloroquine. I wouldn't prescribe it to my patients, but I think we should study it. It sounds like that's borne out to be not true, but that's the way we need to be as physicians, is to be a little bit skeptical ourselves. Unfortunately, not everyone takes that. Sometimes they see something that shows some promise and run with it, or they see a problem where, man, a person got this vaccine and they died. We knew that was going to happen. People die all the time, and it's not necessarily from the vaccine. Some people may even die from this vaccine. But the tough part is we're seeing hundreds of thousands of people die from the disease, and we're looking at a better choice. And so that's what we're preaching on this. Do we have perfect knowledge, or have we given misinformation on this very show? Absolutely. We've given misinformation. It was not intentional, but we were doing the best we could with information we had at that time. My trouble is, like, this, the one doc I listened to in Texas, I think he's intentionally misleading people for his own profit to sell his vitamins and stuff like that, that are supposedly going to save you from coronavirus.
One of the more alarming things I'm reading about the new variants is that they're changing the population who are being affected, the age group of the people who are contracting the disease and having serious bouts of COVID, and starting to increase the demand on hospital services. Is that particularly troubling to you? You know, when this first rolled out, COVID-1, it seemed to be affecting people 60 and older and people with pre-existing conditions. Now we seem to see a lot more 30 and 40-year-olds in the hospital.
Exactly. So that's the unvaccinated population primarily, and that's exactly what we're going to see. So B.1.1.7 is more contagious and more deadly. We're going to see more hospitalizations with it as it can spread through the population that has not yet been vaccinated. And that's reflected in, we're seeing an increase in hospitalization and over almost 2% increase of the numbers in across the United States. So yeah, I think that's exactly what we're kind of keeping an eye on. And that's, again, why getting as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible, you know, still trying to prioritize the elderly, but also I think we're at the point where just get everybody vaccinated, because every person is someone who could spread that on to someone else in their household. So, yeah.
Well, it is really, really good news that, you know, they're projecting now that everybody in the U.S. that wants a vaccine can have one, and sometime by early June, I believe.
Yeah, May or June, yeah.
Some places it's still a little bit difficult to find, but I think if you're looking for it, you should be able to definitely find it by then. My kids are flying down here this coming weekend just to get their second vaccine, because it was a little tough to find the second one for them in Fairbanks. And so they got their first one down here, so we'll just fly them down and get the second one down here. But I encourage... I let them make the decision about whether they wanted to get it or not. But the good part is now the studies are for 12 and older, that we should be able to get younger kids vaccinated with this, which would help slow down the spread tremendously. Because do very young kids get it? Yes, they do. But it is a lower viral load, and it is a lower transmissibility rate, although it's still possible in kids 11 or younger. It seems to be not quite as effective as it is in adults. And as you said, more and more adults are being affected by this disease, not only in hospitalizations and deaths, but the people who have, you know, we've talked about in past shows about long COVID, the people who are getting long COVID are actually younger people. They have a more robust immune response. U.S. News and World Reports just had an article about 8 kids in the Palmer-Wasilla area who had serious immune response to it, and some of these can lead to needing organ transplants and such, and so this is not just a disease of people 65 or older. Unfortunately, in young people it can become a lifelong disease, unless these people may get better, we don't know. Interesting thing about it is people who have long COVID, this is purely anecdotal, but it's appeared in a few articles that a lot of them who have long COVID, those symptoms have disappeared when they've gotten immunized. And I don't know that we exactly know why, but there's been numerous people who have reported this.
Well, and you have seen some numbers that somewhere between 25 and 30% of the people who contract who get COVID turn into long haulers, which is a significant part of the population.
Yeah, it is. I do want to kind of piggyback on what Dr. Jones said. We have hundreds and hundreds of vaccines available. I think we got a batch of about 500 at Kodiak Island ambulatory care clinic. And I think the other clinics have also gotten a pretty big allotment. So there's a lot of availability for everybody. And we're having another drive-through on April 3rd just to kind of put the word out there, because we are seeing a decrease in people that are, you know, coming, signing up for it, or it seems to be lower. We have more vaccine available. And yeah, we just want to everybody to know that it's available in Kodiak for 16 and older pretty much everywhere, I think, at this point.
So what happened in the last week with the clinic? Was it, did we max out? Did they take all the spaces for that clinic that was open last weekend?
No, we had about, I think, just under 200, 160, 80, I can't remember the exact number, that came through the drive-through, but we had 300 available. So we've been giving probably 20, 30 vaccines in clinic each day. It is easier to just come through the drive-through. You just get in and out so much faster than coming in the waiting room, you know, checking in, getting into a room. But yeah, this April 3rd, I hope we can really get a big showing. And I don't know how the other clinics are doing it, but there's, yeah, a lot available.
Yeah, I would agree. There's plenty of vaccine available. So if you have interest in getting it, then yeah, call one of the local clinics. And I think we all have our separate ways of getting it done, but I think we all have vaccine available.
Let me ask you just in closing here. How are things in Florida for your mom? I mean, was she able to get a vaccine?
She was vaccinated before she left. And she wasn't going to go until she got vaccinated. And so she did get vaccinated up in Fairbanks before she left to stay with her sister for a month. Availability is a little tighter down in the lower 48, but it's getting much, much easier to find it in lower 48. We've said it over and over. Since the beginning of this disease, Alaska has been fairly fortunate, both with testing and now vaccination. We've just had much more available to us. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that we live in a place where, even though we're in a small town, we're able to get some of the medical stuff a lot easier than people in the lower 48, where I had one lady who was so mad because she had to wait 15 minutes. This was in the midst of it for a test. And I was like watching the news and seeing people waiting in line for hours and hours and hours in their car. And that just has not been our experience here in Kodiak. We've had a lot of availability, both with testing and now with the vaccine. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, you know, it takes me back to a month or two ago when Shanna had the first drive-in clinic, and people were actually celebrating the fact that they were in line and were in line with their friends for 3 hours, you know, that it really was kind of a blessing that they were able to get the vaccine and to be out with their neighbors, kind of, because we've been so locked up for such a long time. It's really nice to actually go someplace to see somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people still are celebrating, which is great. And if people are kind of waiting and seeing if they need the vaccine, I just want to say you do need the vaccine to prevent getting COVID. At this point, you know, the variants are out there. And if you get one of those and you could have gotten the vaccine instead of COVID, like, this is the time now to just kind of take advantage of that and make sure that you're safe and protected and protect your family. And there's a lot of good data. If people want kind of references for, you know, the actual like numbers of the vaccines, we can provide that as well.
The other thing, I mean, I think that, and I don't really like to, this can be kind of a scare tactic, but it would be really tragic for someone to, you know, to die or to get seriously ill when the vaccine is available right now. And I would hate for something to happen like that. This is one of the things like what people are, some of my patients really want to wait and see kind of how things like play out a little bit more, which is like, I think a natural response. But I think that, again, you're taking that risk of potentially getting very sick, you know, in the meantime. And we would like, there is a little bit of a time crunch on it, because like we talked about, just like looking towards the future, towards the summer, you know, the more we can get vaccinated right now, the less people will get sick with this, the less people will die from it. And if you just look at the sheer numbers, that's going to happen if people delay getting it. And so just really encourage people to go out and get it.
It's time to put this fire out. It's time to leave it smoldering forever where it could blaze up again. We have an opportunity right now to put this fire out and be done with it. But the longer we delay, it's leaving a smoldering campfire that is going to possibly cause another forest fire. And so I really encourage people, get out there and get vaccinated.
I think of it like aspirin, sort of, you know, that it's something that you take. I don't see any downside to taking a vaccine. I mean, there's been scare tactics out there saying you're going to mutate, that all kinds of different things that people have dreamt up. But I don't really see any downside to somebody getting a vaccine.
Yeah, we understand the fears of people. And when you don't really know the science and don't know how the vaccine works, it can sound really scary, especially if there are people kind of taking what they do know and turning that into some kind of fear-based, you know, misinformation. But when you do understand the science of it and also understand the virus is doing the exact same thing to you, only way worse. That's injecting its RNA, all kinds of RNA. And then also all of the proteins, the instructions for making the proteins of itself, it is actually much more potentially going to cause more autoimmune diseases down the line. The same protein, you know, people say, well, maybe infertility is going to be a problem because the spike protein looks similar to a placental protein, and your body might, when it learns to attack that spike protein, it might accidentally mistake that placenta protein and cause, you know, miscarriages. But realistically, that you're already getting the spike protein when you get the virus, plus, you know, thousands of other genes. So those kind of things we can absolutely address and help people kind of understand how it works. And it doesn't, you know, we've talked about this before, it doesn't go into your nucleus where your DNA lives. It stays in the cytoplasm, and that's where the viral mRNA gets transcribed as well, if you were to get COVID instead of the vaccine. So yeah, we want to talk about this. We want to help people understand the science behind it, the true information. People do want the truth. I truly believe that people want the truth. And the sources that sound true are not always the truth. And I think it's just a matter of education, like Dr. Jones said.
Well, that will put a wrap on another edition of Doc of the Rock. Thank you all for participating again today and sharing your knowledge and your support for us and the community. And let's hope this spring break spike we've been sort of avoiding talking about because it really hasn't materialized yet. We're seeing numbers tick up a little bit, but you know, I think if the timeline is there, that this might be the week. So if you did some traveling and hopefully you did the cautious thing, and our numbers will continue to be low here in the community. So with that, happy birthday to Mom down in Florida from all of us.
Hi, Mom.
You guys have a fine and productive week, and take care. Thank you.
Thank you.